Now this is my kind of party. Grab a friend, bring the guns. It's time for the Co-Opticast.
Hey there, welcome to another episode of the Co-Opticast. This is episode 60 for Monday, February 28th, 2011. It is the end of February already, Nick.
I know.
I don't know about you, but I feel some slight PAX East fever coming on.
Yeah, a little bit. It's less than 2 weeks away here.
Yeah, actually, isn't it the end of next week?
Yeah. I should request off. I don't think I've done that yet.
Yeah, you might want to. Luckily, I've requested off, so, you know, at least one of us will be there. And the bed will be a little empty, though, if you're not able to arrive.
No co-opta spooning?
No co-opta spooning. I guess I get to be Little Spoon. And this just took a turn for the creepy.
Yeah.
So let's talk about some actual Vigia games.
Sure.
So what you've been playing, Nick?
I guess the thing I've been playing the most of is Bulletstorm. I picked it up on launch day on the PC and played a bunch of it on there. And then EA actually sent over a 360 copy, so I started playing it on there as well. And I think I like the PC version better.
Yeah.
Not only is it prettier, you know, with the fancy graphics and everything, but the mouse keyboard thing for the skill shots really pays off. You know.
Yeah, I was having a lot of trouble. I played the demo for it and downloaded it on the PS3 for some dumb reason, and because I hate that controller for FPSs, but I always think that, you know, maybe next time something will work better.
Mm-hmm.
And I just couldn't hit anything. I played the demo on the 360 and I could hit everything. And I didn't try the PC demo because there isn't one yet.
No.
And that made me sad.
But yeah, so I mean, basically, like, you know, for most games, the first-person shooters, the control pad works well enough. But because you're trying to do kind of precise things in this, you know, hit them in the nuts or hit them in the head or take out their legs and stuff like that, it's just easier to do on the PC. And the controls they're just a lot more smooth. So I'm playing through the single-player campaign on the PC, but I am playing the Anarchy mode on 360 because that's where most of my friends are. And that's a lot of fun. I actually ended up playing it till like 2 o'clock in the morning on Saturday with Andrew from the site and Track Zero from Colony A Gamers, Drew. So we were really enjoying it. There's a lot of strategy to how it works. Basically, Anarchy mode, if you guys don't know, you have a set number of points you have to get per level. And you get bigger points for doing skill shots in groups. So, like, if I kick a guy up in the air and someone else shoots him, instead of getting the normal 25 points for the, you know, the bullet kick, you get 50 points. Same thing if, like, someone will, you know, will lasso or leash them in and then someone else kicks him into, like, a cactus, instead of getting the normal 75 points for the spiked skill shot, you might get 100. So it's just, like, it seems to be, like, a 25% increase in points by doing the team-based ones. And then there's special bonus guys that you have to perform a specific skill shot on as a team to get really big bonus points. So we got, I think, to level 15 before we really started having problems and really had to start communicating and setting up our skill shots and stuff like that. But it's a lot of fun. The campaign has some really ridiculous moments and some of the funniest written dialogue in a long time. So
are they going to kill all of your sexual organs?
It's pretty much just dick. I mean, that's the word of the game. You know, everyone made a big deal about the swearing in the game, and to be honest, it's really not that bad. I mean, Gears of War and some of the other games have, I think, almost as much swearing. It's just that the swearing in this game is, like, completely ridiculous in like what they say.
It's pretty creative, from
yeah,
what I've
yeah,
seen.
That's a good word for it. It is creative swearing. but there's a lot of good one-liners, and the character interaction and stuff is really well done. So it surprised me. And it's not even just, it's not like a dumb shooter, too. Like, there's a lot of neat little things. There's an entire level where you control a giant remote control, like T-Rex, basically. and it shoots lasers, and you can smash guys with it, and...
Game of the year.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, so...
So I guess the money question would be, since you've been playing the co-op mode, do you think that same level of co-op could be achieved in the campaign?
It could.
Because they seem to indicate that they wanted you to do a very specific thing in co-op, and it seems like this mode was a kind of a concession for what they want you to do.
Yeah, I think that's probably a good thing. I think the problem with the campaign is, like, the set piece I just described with the Tyrannosaurus and stuff, or the robot dinosaur, whatever it is. Like, there's a bunch of these little moments where, in co-op, I just don't think it would be very fun. Because you would kind of be, like, sitting there watching somebody do something.
But what if there was another player controlling another one?
Yeah, in that specific case, it would be... I don't know if it would work. There's, like, another set piece where you're on a giant train, and there's this huge wheel that's rolling towards you, crushing everything, mm-hmm. and you have to kind of, like... There's specific timings you have to shoot out things to knock it off course and stuff like that. Like, that might work a little bit more in co-op. But, I don't know. I guess it's a thing of, yeah, they probably could have done it, but I think maybe it would have bored people. I don't know. It's very finely tuned what they throw at you.
Well, I think and I was just playing devil's advocate some of the people that have been making comments about this game, but I think the thing that was telling for me about the co-op in this was that, Epic is very good at putting co-op everything into their games. You know, the campaign, horde mode, and such.
Yeah.
Glorious co-op experiences such as that. And if, they, along with People Can Fly, decided that the co-op wasn't working out, it probably wasn't working out.
Yeah.
I'm willing to give, those specific people the benefit of the doubt just because they appear to know what makes good co-op.
Yeah, I mean, it's easy to see that they wanted co-op in it because you have a person with you the entire time. And like, he's there and he covers you and it's back and forth. So it's definitely easy to see that, like, they wanted the co-op there. And, it does seem like it was a legitimate reason that it was pulled. Like, sometimes the reason that they give is, that standard answer, oh, it just, it didn't fit the narrative or this or that. I honestly think that their excuse in this case made sense. So, yeah. Anyway, moving on to that, we'll go to the other end of the spectrum in first-person shooters and co-op, and that's Killzone 3. That's the other game I've been playing a lot of, and I don't know, it's very average, and it seems to try and beat a lot of other games. It has more of a Call of Duty feel to it. There's a lot of grenade spam, a lot of big kind of action sequences, and lots of guys rushing at you and stuff like that. And what's funny is there's certain sections of the game where you're Rico in the game, and you also have Sev with you, or no, you're Sev and Rico is with you.
I'm gonna say if you play as Rico, yeah. I'm just gonna throw the disc in a fire.
No, but here's the thing: so you're Sev and you have Rico with you a lot of the time, and in those sections, if you go down, Rico can come and revive you, and vice versa. Like, it's co-op, basically like Army of Two kind of a thing. It's basically like it's co-op with a bot, and it's just like it happens almost right away. And I was like, this is odd because they added the co-op for local in that, which I haven't really got a chance to play yet. But they didn't put the online in, so I don't know. And then there is like a lot of sections in the game where you're all by yourself. And like, there's one section where you get this jetpack, and it's almost like platforming. You have to like navigate between these icebergs and underneath this oil rig and stuff like that. And so like in co-op, I don't know, it's gonna be kind of weird. So hopefully this weekend I'm gonna get to check out some of the co-op in that and see how it goes. But it's just, I don't know. There's a lot of little naggy bug things. Like, I get repeating dialogue. Like, dialogue gets stuck. It'll repeat 3 or 4 times. It seems to play out of order sometimes. Sometimes it just stops playing. Like, there's some really bad audio issues with it.
I haven't had an audio issue on that magnitude since the first Mass Effect.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on, so... and then I did pick up the sharpshooter attachment to give it a shot because I did hear some some good things. And to be honest, it's better than playing with the stupid PlayStation controller. it's a lot more accurate, and it works. The problem I have is I oversteer a lot. So, like, why I can aim really well, and the way they do the aiming and lock-on and stuff is really nice, and I definitely feel in control. When I'm trying to, like, go upstairs and turn the corner, I end up turning, you know, 180 degrees instead of turning, like, 90 degrees or whatever.
So for those of our audience out there who don't know what the sharpshooter is, would you care to inform them what this giant hunk of plastic is?
It's actually, yeah, it is a giant hunk of plastic, but it's pretty well made. basically, you clip in the move controller and the navigation controller to it, and it has a whole bunch of little options to it. It's got a reload trigger on the bottom. It's got a barrel that, or a gun stock that slides in and out, so you can kind of make it comfortable. It's got fire settings on it, like a laser tag gun. You can do single fire and rapid fire and stuff. You can switch that up and down. What else? It looks like it's got a spot on it for like a sight, maybe. Like it looks. I guarantee they're going to come out with like a red dot sight attachment or something like that for it later. But yeah, I mean, so basically,
does it feel awkward when you're wielding a pistol and using a machine gun in your hands?
I didn't play enough to actually have to wield a pistol, but I did like it. I hate to say it, but it felt really good. It brought me into the game more than using the controller. Again, if I can get past some of the movement issues, I'd be good. Basically, I think the solution is, and I think I told you this on IM, I think, you know, so basically you can pick a dead zone you want. So basically that's the area where the targeting cursor can move freely without you turning your guy. And you can adjust that any way you want on the screen, how big you want it or how small you want it. But I think what they need to do is kind of like fade that dead zone, those edges out. So as you approach the end of the dead zone, instead of it like automatically switching to movement mode, it slowly eases into the movement so you have time to pull back. Like it just, it's too abrupt. As soon as you hit the end of the dead zone, you're turning. So anyway, that's enough time about Killzone 3.
Would you say it's better than Killzone 2, though?
No. Not so far. I mean, the only thing that's better is the controls. Like they fix the controls, but so far I'm not all that impressed.
Really, because Killzone 2, not to stay on this so much, but Killzone 2 was a game that I had fits of brilliance. You know, the cinematic stuff in that game was really, really quite engrossing. You know, despite Rico being a complete jackass.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, when you're flying in and, you know, your little air barges are crashing into one another, that stuff was really cool. I thought the graphics were really nice, and I felt like if the controls were better, I would have liked it a lot more. And I've heard a lot of people say that they like 3 better, but I trust your opinion way more than most people.
I just think that, like, there's not any, so like you just described, like, you had those standout moments in the game. I haven't hit one of those yet. Haven't hit a moment where I was like, oh wow, that's really cool. Like it just, like there's a few little neat things it does with the story I liked, but other than that, like there hasn't been any like really big like, oh wow, this is an awesome kind of a thing. Like there's like a mission where you're kind of like in these like little robot mech things and you're taking out tanks. It feels like they pieced sections from other games together, but didn't really like get what they were trying to accomplish with it. It's kind of disjointed.
So it feels kind of like, hey, look what you're doing. This is supposed to be awesome, so enjoy it because it's awesome, and we're telling you how awesome it is.
Yeah, kind of like that. Anyway, and then other than that, I've played a little bit of Dungeons, some more of that for, they're going to have some Beyond Co-op reviews, so I've been playing a little bit of that and still enjoying it. And then I actually fired up Rift. We got a couple of keys and stuff for that. We're actually going to have a giveaway tomorrow with a bunch of cool stuff for that. I figured, what the heck, they sent me a key, I might as well check it out. I only played like an hour. Basically, it's like the intro part, and it's very World of Warcraft, a lot of the systems in it, a lot of the way the quests work and stuff, but it's really pretty, I don't know. We'll see. Like I said, I'm only like an hour in. I played a lot with the character editor, which was pretty in deep, and all that kind of good stuff.
After WoW, everybody else's character creator seems pretty awesome until you realize that most people's characters end up looking the same anyway.
Yeah, I mean, this has got like kind of the EA Sports level of customization, you know. Mm-hmm. Change your eye shape and depth and distance and your brow height and all that other kind of crazy stuff.
I find that stuff doesn't really work too well in an MMO unless it's something like Champions or City of Heroes where you can create something insane, but... Yeah. You know, everybody else is like, well, I could sit here and mangle my character. I can pick preset female number 8 and make her tits huge.
Yeah, and I guess the only other thing I've played, I see you had played it as well, so maybe we can talk about it then, is Dead Space 2. But I kind of got to a really frustrating part, and I haven't found the will to go back and...
I'm interested in knowing where you're
at. It's the part in the schoolhouse, in the gym. I think I told you about this a while ago that I got stuck
in. Oh, yeah, I got past that.
Yeah,
my first try, I might add.
I just don't have enough ammo and stuff, I think. It's the biggest part. The only gun I have is that the mind gun or whatever it's called, where it shoots the little sticky things out that are, you know, that are...
Right. What I did there, you know, not to reveal too much about this game for those who haven't gotten to this part, but... What I ended up doing is I had the line gun, and when the guys all start spawning there, is I actually laid a grid of like five of the chain mines together, and as they ran at me, it blew all of them up.
Yeah, that was what I was trying to do. I basically lined the stage with them, the whole front of it. And, you know, I tried a bunch of different things, and it seems that just a couple of guys sneak through, and it's enough that.
Hmm.
So, again, I tried it like 5 or 6 times. I got really pissed off, and I haven't had the time to go back.
Yeah, I'm pretty far past that at this point. I'm actually on the second disc, which is pretty sweet.
Cool.
So, yeah, I've been playing Dead Space 2, and I'm probably 2/3 to 3/4 of the way through it, and having a lot of fun. I've been actually making a point to get the weapon achievements this time.
Mm-hmm.
So I got like the, you know, javelin a dude, you know, so he flies 30 yards or something, and I killed one of the velociraptor dudes with the sniper rifle, which was really satisfying because you know how those things are. They kind of peek out at you. Well, if you have the sniper rifle and they peek out at you and you headshot them, you get an achievement.
Oh, nice.
So that was pretty sweet. There's one for the line gun where, you know, they're the little crawler guys with the 3 tentacles that shoot spikes at you. If you line gun all of their tentacles off at the same time with one shot, you get an achievement. So I've been trying to play in some ways that would foster some healthy achievement farming. but yeah, I'm constantly impressed with the atmosphere in that game. Like the first one, it's not really scary at all. Like, I'll admit that every now and then, like, the spring-loaded cat stuff kind of, you know, will make me jump. But for the most part, it's just like, this isn't scary. This is frustrating. There are a bunch of enemies here, and they're all attacking me from behind.
Yeah. It's just very tense. Like, there's a lot of tension it builds. Like, you're waiting for, like you said, the spring-loaded cat. You're waiting for the next one, and it just... That's what I found. And it does a really good job with audio as well.
The stuff you're... Your dead girlfriend from the first one says to you whenever she shows up is pretty well done. So, I've been playing a lot of Dead Space. Been, you know, playing WoW whenever I have, you know, some time to blow off some steam. Continuing to play through Dragon Age Origins. I actually, despite preferring the PC version, I found a good deal on the 360 version that came with all of the DLC.
Yeah.
Because if you actually look at how much that stuff costs still on Xbox Live, you're paying like twice as much as you would if you bought that pack.
Mm-hmm.
So I figured $40, I can deal with a graphic downgrade and an easier version of the game, but still get to experience everything.
Yeah, I forgot about actually playing the PC version of that as well. I think it was the last episode actually we talked about that, and you had mention about setting it to easy to get past the part, and I had did that, so...
Yeah. Well, the funny thing is, now that I've played the console version, the console normal is easier than PC's easy. It's kind of like, oh my god, they really did dumb this down.
I heard it does get a lot tougher later on, because I've seen people on Twitter talk about some of the dragon battles and stuff later on, and being very frustrated and stuff like that, so...
So yeah, I've been playing that, played... been playing some Hardcore Uprising for review, and, boy, if that's not another Contra game, I don't know what is. I got pretty good at it, and I brought you in to test out the co-op.
Yeah.
And yeah, there's a learning curve to that game.
Yeah, it's been a long time since I think the last Contra game I really played a lot was Contra 2 on Xbox Live Arcade when that came out, which was probably like 2 or 3 years ago. I had played that a ton.
And those don't even compare to the things like Shattered Soldier and things like that on the PS2, which is closer to what Uprising is like. And, you know, it's really pretty, but I really don't know if I actually like it. You know, it's hard to put my finger on. There's something about it that it seems weird. I'm thinking it might be that the default gun, you know, in order to get a good fire rate out of it, you have to, like, keep button mashing. And that's, like, the trick to winning is to, you know, have a rapid-fire thumb if you don't have a special weapon. Because otherwise you're not putting out enough firepower to hit everything unless you're at super pinpoint with your accuracy and all your jumping and dashing and stuff.
Yeah.
And the co-op is really, it's fun, but that game is so hard that, you know, if one of the players is out of balance, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's like, we played, and I had leveled, we were playing the Rising mode where you can actually level up abilities and things like that. And so I had kind of a tricked out guy, and I had wisely... put a lot of my upgrade points in just having extra lives. Like, I bought the bullet reflect ability and a bunch of lives. And so I have, like, 6 lives right now. And, you know, your co-op partner doesn't get anything that you do. So they come in with a blank character or whatever their character was leveled as. And so Nick hadn't played pretty much at all, and his character was, you know, stock, you know, player 2. He had 2 lives and died in one hit pretty much to everything. And he ran out of lives before he even knew what hit him. And then we discovered that you could steal lives from player 1 or whoever else was alive. So it was me playing, you know, survival mode, seeing as how far I could go without dying. And Nick just eating up my my life stock, you know, as it was back in the NES days. But... It just seemed to... Nowadays, things like that seem almost archaic and unfun. So I'll put some more time in it. I still have to check out local co-op before I actually sit down and write my review. But, you know, it's a game I'm trying to like, and that's never a good sign, I don't think. And finally, I have delved a little bit into the Darkspore beta. I got a surprise beta key for that, and it's interesting. I haven't gotten far enough to make any real calls on it, but it definitely plays like a Diablo. It actually plays almost a little bit like League of Legends Demigod, how your, you know, your guy has abilities and you kind of have to target around and You know, Diablo is very, you know, clicky-mashy, and this seemed a little, like, you have to think a little more about what you want to do.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, they had the whole thing with the 3 character classes that you bring in.
Well, yeah, it's like a rock-paper-scissors mechanic. Like, your character will be better than certain other guys, but if guys that he's weak to show up, you want to swap your character out.
Mm-hmm.
But the interesting thing is there's actually a cooldown towards your character swap, so you can't just, like, you know, plop whichever dude is right for the situation. You have to wait 10 or 15 seconds before you can do it again.
Yeah.
So it's possible to screw up and toss a guy in that's just going to get mauled by the enemies he's fighting.
Yeah.
The other thing is whenever you get gear, you have to place it on your character using the spore editor, which was really odd. I'm not sure I liked that.
Yeah, I mean, they said, like, you know, you get the bonus for it regardless, but it was just so you could make your character your own, like, to customize it and make it look different than other people's.
Yeah. So, you know, everyone's connected to a central server, so I'll definitely check out. Actually, I saw Nick was playing, or Nick had an account, so I made a... I friended you so we could play together.
Okay, cool.
So we'll check that out. But we've talked for an awful long time about what games we've been playing, so I'm going to give it to Nick, and he's going to run through this week's co-op news.
Yeah, I'll try and blast through this quick, because there's quite a few things, and we want to talk about Brink and Hunted later on, so let's do that. excuse me. Up first, actually, this just came across the wire, as they say in the biz. Guitar Hero is not dead. Well, not yet, anyway. apparently, there's been an outpouring of support since Activision has canceled the series and disbanded their studios. And the Facebook page, which has over 3 million fans, got a response. And basically, they decided to celebrate the 3 million fans by releasing more DLC. Previously, they had said that the DLC would stop after February, and with it being the last day of February, it would have seemed that, you know, it's over. But apparently not. There was no details provided. They just said details are coming soon. So if you need more Guitar Hero, yay for you. And kudos to Andrew for a nice extra Photoshop, my previous Photoshop. let's see, moving on. Serious Sam 3 BFE, it's coming, and it's going to have 16 player co-op. This is going to be one of the best press releases I've read in a while. Not only did industry executive talk about getting a boob job for his wife, depending on how well the game sells, It kind of made fun of all other press releases, because you know how a press release typically starts with, like, you know, London in England, September 1st, 2011, or whatever, you know, a date and a place. And
right.
This basically started, said, like, date, time, and place are subjective. that was the first part of it. So I thought that was pretty funny. But yeah, the new screens came out, and the screens look really cool, because it's kind of got this, like, realistic looking style to it, but with like these cartoony looking characters, you know, so it's, I don't know the best way to or what to compare it to.
Brink with more realistic lighting.
Yeah, that's probably, I guess that's pretty good. The texture and the textures and stuff for the surrounding area, it's supposed to take place in Egypt in the 22nd century or something like that. So it's got kind of like sandy and rocky textures.
Oh, so that's what BFE is for. Okay.
So, it looks pretty good. And like I said, 16-player co-op, which I think it was Serious Sam HD, the second encounter, had on PC.
So chaos.
Oh, it was utter chaos. Form. Yeah, it was utter chaos, but it was pretty fun. So that's good news. Let's see, what else we got? Moving on, Little Big Planet 2 finally received a patch, which fixed a host of little nagging issues. But along with that was a free community map pack called, I forget, Hansel Cupcake. And Sackbot? No, it was called, Hansel and Gretelbot.
Hansel and Gretelbot, interesting.
Yeah, so it's actually a community-made narrative, because it utilizes, since a little bit Big Planet 2, it has cutscene editors and voice editors and stuff like that. So there's actually 7 levels that are tied together with cutscenes and story and stuff like that. And apparently it was so well done that Media Molecule decided to promote it and release it kind of as an official thing. So that looks pretty cool. I have to play some more Little Big Planet 2, because I really enjoyed it and I haven't really played it much since I did the review.
I haven't even played it yet, so I have to do that.
Let's see what else we got. Gears of War 3 got a release date, and that release date is September 20th. So that'll be out
later. Yay, that's Halo's day.
Yeah, that Microsoft likes that mid-September release date for their big franchises. It seems to work really well for them, so I don't blame them. But along with that announcement came the release date for the beta as well, which is going to take place in April. It looks like the beta is only going to be versus modes, But it will give you a chance to get some hands-on with the new weapons and you know, get a good feel for the game.
I bet it plays like the other two.
Yeah, probably. Okay. But if you have Bulletstorm, if you pick that up on 360, you already have access to the beta. Otherwise, I think there's going to be some other ways to get in. What else we got? Steam got an update as well. Lots of patches all around here. Steam got an update, and it added screenshot support, as well as improved voice chat. The screenshot thing's been something that's actually been in there for a little bit if you've been using the beta version of Steam. And it's really cool because it works in any DirectX game for, I think it's DirectX 9 and up. Basically, all you got to do is press F12 when you're in a game, and Steam will save a screenshot for you. And then when you exit the game, you can kind of tag it and add a description and then upload it to your Steam cloud, which gives you, I think you have 1 gig of storage for screenshots.
Yeah. But what's something else that I don't think it's in yet, but they announced they're adding a 10-foot UI to Steam. So if you have your computer hooked up to an HD TV, it's going to look real nice. Almost as if your PC was a game console.
Yeah, they said it's going to be kind of designed for controllers and stuff like that, so we'll see.
I mean, that being really sweet.
Yeah, definitely. So yeah, then the other piece of this was that they improved voice chat, which is long overdue. Steam's voice chat was atrocious. So they basically doubled the quality. They improved latency and stuff. So that's good news, especially for co-op gaming if you're trying to get some chat stuff. Because I know after a couple times of trying to use it, we just use third-party solutions for voice chat in there. So
I say next episode we record over Steam voice chat.
I still don't think it's that good, but I guess
we should do it while we're playing Magicka.
Okay, that sounds like a plan.
Sounds horrible, actually. That's a bad idea.
Speaking of Magicka, I don't see it on here, but they did announce some free DLC for the game, and it was kind of too...
They called it Mea Culpa.
Yeah.
It should tell you everything you need to know.
Crap, I can't get to it right now. But anyway, it was basically as a thank you and a I'm sorry, and here's some really cool stuff for
having
all the
bugs. They
added
a new spell called Crash to Desktop, and that's amazing.
Yeah. So I think, was it out yet, or it was coming out?
It's out.
Okay.
Actually, when I booted my computer, it downloaded the update, because it comes in the form of a patch.
Okay, cool.
You get a few new items and the new spell I already mentioned. And like I said, they've titled this Mea Culpa.
Yeah. I think we got to get another session together with Jason and try and work through the rest of the game.
You gonna kill me with that stupid lightning bolt?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Moving on. The PlayStation Portable gets a price cut. It's now only $129.99. This is for the PSP 3000 model. And that's
PSP Go price remains unaffected.
Yeah, but that was a pretty bold move. I don't want to say bold move, but they're undercutting the DSi now, which is basically their main competition by $20. So, see if it spurs
one of them still has games coming out for it, and the other one's the PSP.
Hey, one of them has Vagrant Story coming out tomorrow, and
it
one
does.
Of them
doesn't. It really does, but you know, I don't think that's going to be as appealing as you know Pokemon.
Yeah. I guess what was the next Pokemon just actually came out, Black and White or Black and Silver?
I think it's either just came out or in the next week or two.
Yeah,
you know, which is strange. Because they're releasing it right before the new DS.
Yeah. You know,
the 3DS comes out. And the new Pokemon comes out for the old DS. Within like 2 weeks of each other.
I was never a big fan of Pokemon. I had worked at Electronics Boutique at a time when all the little kids were buying Pokemon cards and boxes. And I think it was when Red and Blue first came out. I think those were the first... One of the first couple, like when they did the pairs of Pokemon games.
Oh, did your boss pull all the rare cards to try and sell on the side too?
No, he didn't do that. We my boss actually absolutely despised them. As soon as like a little kid came up and went to the counter, he's like, "Let me guess, you want Pokemon cards?" So,
well,
We were just mad because children. We sold at the time. We were selling more Pokemon cards than we were selling video games. So,
hey, it's a game. It's tied to a video game. It counts.
Yeah. Let's move on. Let's talk about Arkane Games' next title, A Valley Without Wind. And they've announced that the game's going to have a co-op mode, and I think they said that ideally it's probably going to be about 16 players. But it's not going to have a cap on it. Basically, the way it works is think of it kind of like Minecraft, except it's not so much focused on building and stuff as it is just survival and kind of teamwork and stuff like that. And basically, it's set in a post-apocalyptic world after... I guess it's not apocalyptic. It's still the apocalypse, I guess, after an ice age, right?
Something like that.
Something like that. So there was an ice age, and it basically wiped out all of the Earth, and so you're part of, like, the last surviving people. And one really interesting mechanic about it is you're going to die. I guess they basically said, like, you're going to die a lot, but if you die, like, your new character that comes back retains all the abilities of the previous one, but, like, you have, like, a graveyard in the game and stuff, and so you can kind of see, like, your past characters and I guess, like, the stats attached to them and what they did and stuff like that. So that's going to be a whole big mechanic of it. But the co-op part of it, like, you can basically have, like, a static world or a persistent world that all these players can come in and join and work on together. And I don't know, it sounds pretty interesting, sounds unique. It's got a, like, the screenshots, when you first look at it, you're like, oh, that looks really... amateur. Like, it has this weird style, like it's almost like paint looking I don't know how to describe it, but then when you see it in motion, it's actually really beautiful, like the trees that sway and stuff like that. So I was pretty impressed, and it's still got a couple months to go before they get it finalized, so we'll see. Let's see, Fable 3 got a date on PC finally, a mere 5 months after, 6 months after it was released?
6 months, yeah.
And that date is May 17th. Also, along with that announcement, was that the game was going to support 3D for people that want 3D fart jokes. DLC was announced for the 360 version, which really surprised me because Fable 2 was really consistent with its DLC releases and it was churning out content like every month or two. And this is like the first real major content besides some dogs that Fable 3 had.
I'm not sure it sold as well as Fable 2.
It must not have. Either that or they were just concentrating so much on Fable 3 that they haven't worked on the DLC as much as they... Maybe. Or, you know, the PC version.
Here's a question. Did Fable 2 ever come out on PC?
No. No, it didn't.
What is with the big Microsoft franchise games skipping one of their sequels on, you know.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
Yeah, I'm not sure either.
Because, like, you get Fable 1, and then no Fable 2, but you get Fable 3. And then there was, you know, they made a Gears of War, but no Gears of War 2. Yeah. They made two Halo games, but no 3.
Yeah.
Like, I get that they're probably not selling that well. Because, you know, most of your audience is on the console, but why get PC gamers' hopes up? I loved Fable on the PC, because it had all the extra content.
Yeah, had the Lost Chapters, I think that's what it was called, right?
Yeah, pretty sure.
Alright, let's move on, and let's talk SOCOM 4. The co-op mode was finally officially unveiled for it. It's a 5-player co-op mode. Sadly, it won't be through the campaign, but what it will be is... a completely custom mode where I guess there's like 6 or 7 levels that you can like kind of piece together to make a campaign that you play with friends. I didn't go into too much detail with it, but it looks pretty promising. I know SOCOM 3 on the PSP was really well done, so having a true next-gen kind of looking SOCOM should be interesting. I know Jim's really excited for it. He's a big SOCOM fan.
Yeah.
Too bad he doesn't have a PS3. Sorry, Jim.
Aww.
let's move on. Earth Defense Force Insect Armageddon. It's got an official release date, and that date is July 5th. Now you can celebrate the nation's independence with fireworks and killing lots of bugs.
Yes.
Yeah.
You can.
I'm excited about this, and I'm excited about PAX East because we're going to get some hands-on time with the game and talk to some of the developers.
You know who's going to be really jealous?
Andrew?
Andrew, yes.
Yes. Yes, he is. I know he's... I think, actually, his wife might... I think his wife was the one who put, like, a ridiculous amount of time into the game. So she might be more jealous. But... let's see. Ratchet and
Clank... By proxy, he should be jealous, right?
I think he'll be jealous, too.
Okay.
Ratchet and Clank, All for One. We got some new co-op details of that. The game's going to support drop-in and drop-out co-op locally and online, which is... good news. I guess it's going to be a game where the AI kind of takes over the characters that aren't being controlled. There's a lot of like puzzle and platforming kind of stuff that I guess requires multiple people. What else we got here? Not much else. I guess it talks about a bit about the how the former enemies and rivals are working together. So there's going to be some narrative based on that in the game itself. I've never followed the Ratchet and Clank series, so
I've played like every third one. I played one of the sequels on the PS2, then I played the PS3 one, and I played the PSP one. So I really have no concept of what the narrative is either.
Yeah, I wouldn't know, but I know that there's a lot of hardcore people, hardcore fans of the series, so. I'm sure they'll enjoy it.
I'm always impressed with Insomniac's ability to animate those characters. It's very Pixar-like.
Yeah. Yeah. Finally, Kotaku actually had a pretty neat exclusive where they got some screenshots from a canceled version of Diablo 3. It was actually from 2005. And it basically looks very
exactly
much
like Diablo 2.
Yeah, except it's actually 3D. So it's kind of interesting.
It looked so much like Diablo 2, I could say I would probably have been disappointed.
Yeah.
I think that, well, the new vision for Diablo 3 certainly has its points that I'm not happy with. If presented with a Diablo 2 but in 3D or a full reimagining beautification of Diablo, I would probably take the latter.
Yeah. I had mentioned this in the article, but a long time ago, I think this was actually at my first E3, I had met someone who was very close to someone at Blizzard, and he was spilling the beans on Diablo 3 at the time to me. And he had said, he was telling me the story about how, it's still the war between heaven and hell, but hell was actually invading heaven, and a lot of that was going to be taking place there and stuff like that, and... It sounded really interesting at the time, and I don't think we've seen anything like that in the Diablo 3 screenshots that are out now, the new things, and most of what has been said is it's taking place 20 years after the events of Diablo 2, it's in the same world and stuff like that, so I don't know, I kind of hope that it does, instead of going down, you're going up this time.
Well, Blizzard is pretty good at keeping things secret. I mean, StarCraft 2 has an ending that was pretty, wild.
Yeah.
So, we'll see. I don't really care about the story so much as if I can, create loot and run through on, like, 8 difficulties and level a dude to 99 and play on ladders. I'm probably going to be happy with Diablo 3. But then again, I really, really, really love Diablo.
Yeah.
Really, really. Like, a whole lot.
We'll still keep our fingers crossed that they're going to make this year. It sounds like they want to, but...
I almost hope they don't.
Yeah. It's going to be busy fall.
There's, like, Skyrim is probably going to eat up most of my trailer.
That trailer was so good.
It was good. And it made me want to run, down the street and go say, hey. Hey, Bethesda. Give me Skyrim now.
I'm here for the Skyrim.
I am here for the Skyrim, please, and I will not leave until I have it. I am prepared to stay camped in your lobby. Or in the Fallout 3 trailer that you've so conveniently reparked in front of your building.
We've got a bum living in the Fallout 3 Airstream trailer again.
I should so do it. I bet it's unlocked.
Nice. You'd probably have to sleep in there with the creepy burned out mannequins.
I would be okay with that, because at least I would have someone to talk to. Will I dream of Skyrim, my beautiful Skyrim, and my Viking dragonkin guy who's going to kill dragons and kill people and steal their houses? Because that's what the Elder Scrolls games are. It's a murder simulator where you can steal people's property.
I was just going to say, in this great game, you can yell to the mountains to summon dragons, and you can steal goblets.
I'm going to steal every Daedric artifact I can find and not remember that they weigh 50 pounds and I can no longer walk.
Oh, man. All right. Let's move on.
Speaking of Bethesda games.
Yes, good transition here. Speaking of Bethesda. Last week I went to New York City to preview two of Bethesda's upcoming co-op titles with Brink and Hunted the Demon's Forge. So let's see, I'll talk about Brink first. I think it was actually on this podcast many moons ago, you had described what you thought Brink was. And that was basically a team-based shooter that has co-op, right? Something like that, something to that effect.
It seemed more like, if you remember the description for The Crossing back in the day.
I do not.
Well, it was... So that you'll have like an objective-based thing on one side, and you can have a few players on that side, and then the other players will basically be your enemies. It's almost like I almost envisioned it, and you're about to school me on it, but I almost envisioned it as like what was the Unreal Tournament 2K4 objective mode?
Assault.
Assault. So it was almost like Assault, but both teams have objectives, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, that is kind of a fair comparison, because basically there's always 16 players at a time, so there's never, like, you're never facing overwhelming AI odds or anything like that. There's always going to be 8 opposing players, or, whether they're bots or real people.
Right.
But it does have a really in-depth objective system and class system. So you basically... the game is incredibly customizable. You start out, you can have up to 16 characters, and these characters earn experience, which you can unlock different weapons and armors and customizations, different facial hairs and, little things that you put on your arm and tattoos and this and that. Really in-depth and... they basically said that the chances that two people are going to look alike are going to be pretty limited. And, each section of the guy must have had at least 25 different things that you could put on it that I had seen. And then on top of that, you have... So there's two forces, security and resistance. So each side has their own unique objects that you can place on them. So you have these 16 characters that you can have, kind of like a little RPG. You pick that character, and then you go play with them. The characters have 3 body types. They can be thin, normal, and heavy. The thin guys basically can't carry some of the heavier weapons, and they also can get headshotted. They're the only character that can die from a headshot. The heavy guys basically are stuck... pretty much on the ground. They have a hard time climbing some of the sections and stuff in the game like that. Anyway, so you get into the game, pick your starting class. So you have your body type, but then you have a class. You can be an operative, which is like you can hack stuff. You can be an engineer, which you can give weapon buffs to your team, and you can set up turrets. You can be a soldier, which gives ammo to your team, and you can set up demo charges, and you can be a medic, And obviously you can heal your team there or give health buffs. So anyway, you go in, and depending on your class, you hit a button, and it brings up an objective wheel, and there's like maybe like four or five different missions that are going on at any time. So if you're a medic, it might be you got to protect these people because their mission is to go place a demo charge on this wall to get through it. If it's an engineer, it might be you got to go set up turrets outside this room because these guys need to go in here and hack this terminal, and it's going to take 5 minutes. So there's things like that that's going on, but every mission has like an overall objective. So like the one we played, you had to break into this compound and break out one of your friends that was being held hostage. And so what happens is as you get to these kind of these mini objectives, and depending on which class it is, they complete it, like whether it's breaching a wall, there might be some more cutscene and story that kind of takes place in the middle of it. So it kind of breaks it up a little bit and brings all the players in the narrative. It's not just a straightforward shooter that's going on and stuff like that. What was interesting is like there was this kind of like ebb and flow of what was going on, and we're like, one team might be doing really well, and all of a sudden the objective changes, and the other team just happens to be more well prepared for stopping the other team. So, like, you'll keep dying and respawning and trying to complete the objective, and eventually you realize, oh, crap, we better, you know, change up our classes here and try and do it this way. Combined with, like, the whole smart system, which is their movement system in level, basically you can hold a trigger, you can slide between cover, you can climb up over boxes, you can jump across ledges and stuff like that. When you start taking that into account, you kind of approach these objectives and areas in different ways. It really doesn't make it feel so stale. You know how like normally like in team versus games, you learn the map and you know all the places to go and things to do?
Like, yeah.
There just seems to be so many different ways of doing things that you never know which way something's going to happen. You know, usually you can like sit in a building and be like, okay, yeah, I know the guys are going to come through this door. But you don't always know that in Brink because, yeah, they might come through the door, but they might be dropping down from the ceiling, or they might be coming up from the floor through, you know, this section or something like that. So it's pretty interesting. It's really fast paced until you hit those kind of like those standstill moments where you have to work together and decide, you know, what to do. Co-op is it is extremely focused on co-op because you get the bulk of the experience by doing supportive actions, whether it's healing people, giving them weapons and ammo, being like simply near your team and covering them if they're under fire. Obviously being around when an objective is completed, different things like that give you the most experience. And the game actually, while it tracks kills, the leaderboards don't even show it. It just shows your experience and how well you're doing in that sense.
Right. You know, I'd be interested in seeing how that experience all ends up racking up like that, because you see games like Left 4 Dead, where it keeps track of all the times that you you covered somebody, but it's really only there to show you that you did a bunch of team-based actions. So actually being rewarded for it seems like a new spin on things. Because games have tried doing it in the past, like if you played an engineer in Battlefield 1942, you get your... you rack up your score by repairing jeeps and things like that, but you know, really that was kind of boring, at least to me. Yeah. So, you know, if keeping everybody in the action and performing class-based stuffed, I'm thinking of like Oreos or something. but, you know, performing things that your class is suited for rather than simply racking up headshots or whatever,
yeah,
seems like a really interesting way of, you know, controlling progression.
Yeah, well, it was kind of funny because as soon as, like, people started to realize that when we were playing, everyone started to switch immediately to the medic class. but, you know, it doesn't really work that well because then we started to be underpowered and running out of ammo and stuff. And the game just has a lot of attention to detail that, you know, it's hard for me to describe, like, in a written preview, but just little things where, like, you know, you can pick your default starting class, like, that you always want to use, and the game will auto-call for weapons, or call for ammo if you need it, or call for health if you need it. you know, the HUD will, if you're a medic, the HUD will show the people that are down how far they are from you, if they're under fire or not, you know, if it's safe to go there, things like that. The revival mechanic is pretty cool because instead of, like, the medic going over and getting, you know, taking a beating as he's trying to revive somebody, you basically just throw the people a syringe and they revive themselves. So I thought that was pretty cool. That was a little different. And like the medic too, it's kind of a little bit like Team Fortress 2, but you can kind of run behind people and you can kind of throw a healing buff on them and they get kind of like a 20% bonus of health, which can sometimes really help turn the tide of battle when things are going crazy. Another interesting thing is the grenades in the game won't actually kill you. They just knock you down. They said they wanted to get away from the whole grenade spam thing and people being cheap and just constantly trying to do grenades and stuff like that.
Now they run risk of being able to stun lock people by well-timed grenades.
Yeah, I guess it's possible. I didn't see it happening, and it does. And you only have one grenade at a time, so it's not like.
So does it seem like there's an epiphany moment in a match where players all of a sudden get it?
Yeah, definitely. Actually, there's a lot of them. Excuse me. Like I said, like that whole, we kept hitting it. We had played, I think, two or three missions, and it happened in every one. And they, you know, depending on what the objective was, a lot of times it was kind of a covering one. Where the one I remember was, there was two operatives. They had a hack terminals, and we had a guard, and we were like in a building. There were stairways on either side. We had a guard guys from coming up. Well, if we were just playing as soldiers and stuff, it just wasn't like enough firepower. To hold off the waves of enemies. So eventually we had people smart enough to switch into engineers, and they started putting up turrets, and the medics were guarding the engineers while they were putting up the turrets, and the soldiers were covering them in sense. So we had this like kind of this tight group of people right there pounding through the objective. It was a lot of fun. I said in my preview, or maybe I said it in the comment section, it was one of those games where I finished playing and I kind of got depressed because, like, man, I'm not going to get to play this game for like a couple months now.
A couple really weeks, liked you mean? I was...
Yeah, that's true.
It's going to be at PAX.
It's at PAX. That's true. but yeah, no, but you know what I mean. With I won't get to play it with a bunch of my friends and stuff. I think it's going to be a game where. At least the group of guys that I've played a lot of multiplayer games with, they're going to really like and really going to stick with it for a while because it's very balanced, and that's always a good thing. So
I only had one more question, and it pertains to their smart system.
Okay.
How exactly does that stand out, if it does? Because it was all about, you know, character motion, if I remember.
Yeah,
they,
so
they've made a big to-do about being able to like vault over tables effortlessly and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest ways I was using it is like, so for instance, the one part of the mission, there was like a gate we had to kind of get through, and worked our way around. And there's a bunch of containers on the other side of it, and a couple of us were able to use the smart thing to kind of climb up the containers and get an angle overlooking like the courtyard where our guys were coming through and laying down cover. So I used it there a couple times. It's really good to slide between cover as well. Like if you know, you're at a doorway or something or a big opening, you're on one side and you want to get to the other to get another angle, holding the smart thing and pushing over, your guy will just slide from cover to cover.
Okay, so it's contextual then.
It is, yeah, it's completely contextual to where you are and what's in front of you. There's a couple times that I vaulted, you know, I took a shortcut. Instead of like going like around the staircase to go up, I vaulted over the railing and then up the staircase, you know, to save myself a few seconds kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think it'll work. It makes the game feel a little Mirror's Edge-ish.
That's not
for
bad.
Some of the actions. No, it's not bad, and I think it works well, and it makes it a little bit less of a cookie cutter shooter in that, like, you know, okay, these guys can only move this way. It's, you know, and it's better than seeing people try and bunny hop to dodge crap, yeah. Right? There's no bunny hopping going on. Instead, people are, you know, sliding out of the way or trying to climb away and stuff like that. So
I'd imagine it also adds a large vertical game to it.
Oh, yeah, and it's definitely evident in the levels that I had played that they put areas for you to climb up and get over and overlook things or go under things and things like that. So,
okay,
but yeah, so that's Brink coming out. I believe that one is the May 17th release date. I played the PlayStation 3 version was the one they had on display. So it looked really good though. Played really well. It's definitely in the polishing phase, and there's no reason they're not going to hit that date.
Good.
The other game I've
been waiting for it forever.
I know. When I wrote the preview and I looked up when it was announced, I was kind of surprised that it was, you know, almost 2 years ago. It will be 2 years since it was announced by the time it's out. But the other game I played from Bethesda is In Exile's Hunted the Demon's Forge. And once again, this was a game that kind of surprised me when I played it at E3 last year, because I really wasn't interested in it, to be honest. It just didn't look that interesting to me. It just didn't grab me or anything. But I did play it at E3 with Jason in co-op, and we had a lot of fun. And now it's even better now. You know, we're talking almost a year later, but they added a lot more of the RPG elements to the game. So it's not just so much a shooter. It was kind of, I read a preview on Joystick today, and
seemed overwhelmingly negative.
Yeah, like, I don't even think the guy, he was like, oh, it just feels like a shooter, you know, feels like a Gears of War thing, this and that. And like, he missed like so many of the things in the game that make it an RPG, like all the loot and stuff that you can collect, and the items have, you know, plus this bonus to that, and you know, there's different levels of rareness to them and stuff that you can pick up. There's like 60 some side quests that you pick up. So as you're going around the levels, there you'll see these dead, they're called dead stones, and if you pick them up, basically a ghost of someone that died tells you something that happened to them, and you have to complete like a mini quest for them. So there was like 60 of those, and they're all really well written kind of things. At least the few that I had seen, they're kind of, you know, kind of funny, not really serious, and things like that. But anyway, backing up a few steps, the game's a two-player co-op game where you play as basically a warrior and like a ranged kind of a character, a female ranged character. In single player, you can switch between them at certain points. There's basically these stones that you switch at, these crystals that you touch, and you'll switch characters. But in co-op, obviously, you each take the role of one of the characters. I had played as Alara, which is the ranged character. She has the bow and arrow. And I guess it was about 3 or 4 levels into the game. And so I picked, I picked like an ice arrow. I picked like a flaming arrow, and I think like a lightning spell. I think you can have 3 or 4 spells armed at a time, or 3 or 4 abilities. The abilities can be magic, or they can be tied to your weapons. One interesting thing was the magic abilities you can actually basically buff your teammate with. So like the lightning spell, you can charge up and buff your teammate, and then like it charges his weapon. So like every time he would swing and hit an enemy, it would do lightning damage and stuff like that. But co-op was like really prevalent throughout the whole game, because the character's strengths and abilities were constantly playing off each other. So like while... first of all, I got to play with Max Kaufman, who was one of the writers and designers for the game. So that was pretty cool, because whenever you get to play with a developer, you know, play a game with a developer by your side, you get to a lot of insight into some of the things. But he was playing as Kadok, which is the melee character, and he was basically holding back the enemies doing melee damage and stuff like that. While I was sitting in the back picking him off the arrow, but like one of his abilities, he could basically levitate everything around him. So while he was holding the levitation up, I was using like an ice arrow and freezing all the guys he was levitating. And then when he let them down, they all just slammed to the ground and shattered, kind of a thing. So that was pretty cool. And there was other times when things like that happened, where basically had to play off of each other to survive whatever was going on. What else? It has an interesting revival mechanic, too. We were talking about Brink's revival mechanic, where you basically throw something at the guy and they revive themselves. And this is kind of the same thing. You basically just need a line of sight to the other player, and you just chuck a potion at him and they res. So that was kind of nice. It's not, you don't have to try and get yourself in between like 50 guys that are attacking your down person and try and resurrect them. You just have to see them and you chuck a potion on their back. What else should I talk about? So the co-op, they announced that not only is it going to have online co-op, they are adding split-screen play. They said that there was an overwhelming majority of people that were requesting it. They were kind of surprised and shocked. So they did.
A lot of people love split screen. I don't see why that's a shock.
Yeah, I know. Well, it was a shock to them because I guess, you know, I don't think developers really took the time to
read our site, read our forums. talk to Eric.
Yeah, I had said that there's an overwhelming majority of, you know, husbands and wives and dads and, you know, parents and kids that play together, and that's how they play together. And so it's a whole other generation of people that are doing it that way. But some interesting things for co-op, any of those, like those side quests that you complete, while the main, I think they said the main quest completion, you won't bring back to your game, but character progress comes back. The side quest stones come back. Any of the crystals and hidden objects you find come back with you, and you can apply to your characters. You can actually bring your character's progress into someone else's game. So you have to use both your characters. So you can bring both your characters into the game as the host. So when you join a game, you have the choice of picking the host characters or your own characters. So basically, you can work together to level up either person's characters and stuff like that. So there's a lot of attention to detail with the co-op, letting people have the flexibility to do what they want there. It was a lot of fun. Like I said, it kind of surprised me the depth that they added. It's a linear story. You know, there's kind of like linear levels to go through, but there's a lot of little side things that you can do, whether it's like those Deathstone quests. There's even like side quests in the levels themselves. Like the one we had, we basically fell into a cavern. We had to get out of it, and we had to get the special flame to open this door. And as we were doing that, we found another little, basically this giant totem guy that told us a little puzzle, and then that was a side quest we could do if we wanted to, so. It's definitely a good balance of Gears of War style gameplay meets a lot of RPG play mechanic, you know, like stat mechanics and item mechanics and stuff like that. So,
excellent.
I think it'll surprise a lot of people. I don't know. We'll see. Like I said, by that joystick preview, he missed a good part of what was cool about it. So I don't know.
Maybe it's just more apparent to you.
Maybe I'm smarter than joystick.
Well, I don't know about that.
Okay.
You don't have a podcast with your brothers.
No, but if I had brothers, I would have a podcast with them. But it still wouldn't be nearly as funny as my brother, and me.
Yes. Officially endorsed by the Co-opticast.
Yep.
Anyway, So both those games looking like some co-op goodness coming at your
And Hunted is out like 2 weeks after Brink. It's out, I think, June 3rd. So,
it's the week before E3, isn't it?
Yeah, I think E3 is the 6th or 7th starts.
Yeah, because Infamous 2 is coming out at the same time, and it just seems like an odd time to release big games, if you ask me. Because no one's going to be covering them. They'll be covering E3.
Yeah.
Huh. Anyway, we have talked for an awful long time, so let's wind things down by telling you about the two upcoming co-op releases before our next episode. We have on March 1st, that's tomorrow, yes. Dawn of War Retribution for the PC.
That stuck up on me. I thought it was later this month, but I saw the THQ official Twitter account had mentioned it's coming out tomorrow.
Yeah, it is. And I still need to go through the last expansion before I fire this one up.
Yeah.
So many games. And on March 8th, we have Pixel Junk Shooter 2. Get your fluid dynamics on. And that's coming out on PSN. And we have been posting an awful, awful lot of previews lately, so let's talk about some site stuff, and let's get this right out of the way. We've had one review since we last spoke, and that was Tales from Space About a Blob, which, you know, that sounds like two different games. About a Blob could be a game, and Tales from Space could be a game. But hey, it's one game, and I believe that was on PSN, correct?
Yes, it was.
Okay. So, for features, Nick just talked at length about Brink and Hunted, but if you really feel the need for a text companion, there are two written previews of them that we posted yesterday. There's a Co-op Classics video edition for Altered Beast and Joust, and on the download article about creating the best online distribution system, Dungeon Siege 3 preview, Fancy Pants Adventures preview, a Gatling Gears preview, a Co-op Classics for Tunnels of Doom, a Darkspore preview, and a Battlefield report talking about Battlefield 3. That's a lot of previews, and I'm pretty sure we've got more coming this week, don't we?
Do we have more? I don't know if it's this week, but we have a lot of reviews coming this week now.
Okay, well, you know, next time we talk, it'll be weighted on the side of reviews.
Yeah.
Actually, next time we talk, it'll be the day after PAX.
Yeah. Maybe we should just do the podcast like driving back from PAX East.
We totally should. We'll record it on my iPhone or something.
All right. I have a little voice recorder we could use.
Yeah. Well, that would be kind of like a weird Hunter S. Thompson Gonzo podcast. That could be interesting.
Maybe we'll do a video
about what we're seeing on the side of the road.
We'll do a video edition of it.
Oh.
Live from the road.
We can do a Ustream from you know, one of our mobile devices and just live stream it.
Yeah,
that would be pretty crazy. Or we could be lazy and not do it.
We'll be so tired from freaking PAX.
We'll have to see, because you know I think we're gonna have to head back pretty early, and then I have to drive the rest of the damn day.
Yeah, I haven't decided what's going on then. Anyway, we'll take that offline. Let's wrap this up.
Yeah, we will. Let's see. You should buy some shirts from our Split Reason store, because last I checked, we were running out of the cool one, the Co-op Revolution.
Oh, it's wait, let me insert here. If you're going to PAX East, we're gonna have some limited edition swag there. If you see one of us,
we are.
Yeah, yeah, and it's not t-shirts. It's something.
Okay, I know what it is. Yeah. I think.
I'm not gonna say right now.
It'll be cool, trust me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, buy some shirts at our Split Reason affiliate store. Leave feedback on iTunes. You can follow us on Twitter. We are Co-Optimus without the dash. And I believe we have a Facebook fan page linked right on the front page of the site. You could always like us, because we like it when you like us. It makes us feel good. And finally, you can leave us a voicemail. We actually had some, but we ran so long this week, we aren't getting to them. So look for that in a future installment.
Yeah, we definitely. And it was a good question too.
So. It was a good question. So I promise you, we will get to it. But the number for that is area code 646-926-6748. This has been the Co-Opticast. I'm Mike, and that guy's Nick. And we will see you in a while.